I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gale Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. State and local law enforcement officials are very concerned about highway traffic safety in Vermont. They say many people are driving at excessive speeds, are showing signs of road rage, and are distracted by the use of handheld cell phones and other electronic devices. To deal with this growing problem, state and local police throughout Vermont have launched a high visibility campaign to crack down on drivers who are operating their cars in an unsafe manner. Thomas Anderson is Vermont's public safety commissioner.
Talking with the state police, our law enforcement partners across the state, to increase visibility out on the roadways of both local and state police officers. But again, that will have an effect, but it's probably a short-term effect. And really what we're trying to do is change people's driving behavior.
How serious a problem has this become, and what are some of the steps that can be taken to improve highway safety in Vermont? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Colchester Police Chief Jennifer Morrison, who's also the head of the Vermont Chiefs of Police Association, and Lieutenant John Flanagan, who is the commander of traffic operations for the Vermont State Police. Welcome to the program. It's great to have both of you here.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Chief Morrison, we're going to discuss some specific issues concerning highway safety today. But first, I wonder if we could just take a big picture look at this overall problem. How concerned are you about the level of highway safety in Vermont these days? Are things getting worse?
You know, I think that's a multifactorial situation that we have to look at. I do believe things are getting worse, but it's not for any one reason. I think that the level of technology that are in people's hands plus inside their vehicles with them, no matter where they travel in their car, is part of the problem. But we are also creating cars that move faster, more nimbly. And so, yes, we have a lot of situations going on. We constantly improve our roadways, smoother, nicer surfaces to drive on. It encourages people to drive more quickly and use the technology that they've bought, these nice cars. So, yes, there's a variety of factors going on. And, of course, we've been alarmed by the recent lack of seatbelt use in the spate of crashes that we saw a couple weeks ago.
Do you think part of it is that people are spending more and more time in their cars and they feel a need to be more productive, hence using maybe their cell phones? We've even heard of people using computers in their cars.
I do think that we overvalue multitasking. I think that we're still stuck in that mindset that multitasking is somehow efficient and allows us to get more done. And yes, I do think people are pressured to get a lot done, whether it's in their personal lives or their professional lives. And the technology that we have created in the last decade allows people to actually have the opportunity to do those things while they are mobile. And the fact that it's not safe or prudent to do it doesn't appear to be influencing people's behavior in many cases.
Lieutenant Flanagan, what do you think? As you look back at your years with the Vermont State Police, do you think conditions are worse today than they were, let's say, 5 or 10 years ago?
You know, Bob, we don't have any data to support it's getting worse for overall crashes and especially major crashes, even despite the recent spate of fatal crashes that we've had. You know, these are all lives, and most, if not all, are preventable crashes, even though we've had 40 deaths this year compared to 39 where we were this time in 2016. But for major crashes that include serious injury and fatalities, we've improved in recent years. However, it does give us pause that we need to continue to reassess our strategies and look what the data is telling us and find creative and new innovative ways to reduce crashes and change behavior. We're making safer cars, as the chief alluded to, and I think many feel a sense of invincibility inside the vehicle compartment and just go about their hurried daily routines and fail to focus on our roadways.
And the chief also mentioned car technology, Lieutenant Flanagan. Some of these cars with these big touch screens, there are all sorts of things you can do. But while you're doing all those things, your eyes are not on the road.
Yes, and some of the technologies that they're now putting in vehicles are supposed to make us safer, and you wonder sometimes if they're making us less safe and maybe a false sense of security. You know, you've got lane departure technology, things to make you back into spaces, And you wonder sometimes if that makes us pay less attention to the priority that which should always be safe driving, keeping our eyes on the road, our hands on the wheel, and our heads in the game.
There's an interesting statistic about the link between traffic fatalities and seatbelts. I believe roughly 57% of all fatalities this year in Vermont, in those cases, the victims were not wearing a seatbelt. Chief Morrison, is this the biggest single issue that could affect highway safety?
I don't believe that is the single issue about highway safety. I believe that's the single most important issue around crash survivability. So I think that they're somewhat two different situations. We need to change driving behavior so that folks refocus on the primary mission, which is safely conveying your vehicle and its passengers from point A to point B and not doing 6,000 other things at the same time. So I do believe distracted driving, speeding, tailgating, and generally aggressive driving are the biggest threats to the safety on our roadways. But if you want to speak about the ability to stay positioned behind the wheel in the event of a crash or survivability upon impact of a crash, then yes, wearing seatbelts would be the most important factor to improve those numbers.
I think I saw a number that Vermont's seatbelt compliance rate is around 84%. That means 16% of drivers are not wearing their seatbelts. Chief, how do you persuade them that it's a critically important thing to do?
Honestly, I don't know how anyone could think that it's a good idea not to buckle up, knowing what we know now. I think primary enforcement would be certainly a place to start. Our current laws do not allow us to pull someone over merely for the fact that we observe them or a passenger not wearing a seatbelt. I think primary enforcement laws would absolutely be a step in the right direction. And again, maybe we need to go back to the beginning, to the driver's ed classes, and begin to go back to the basics of discussing and demonstrating why it's important to be restrained during operation of a vehicle.
Let's go to our listeners and start off with Richard, who's calling from Littleton, New Hampshire. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
Okay, here's a couple of items. One is the more important thing is to prevent the accident. Okay, we need to be buckled up, sure. I was when I was hit by someone coming up behind me on the interstate at 120, driving me into the median at about 100. That wasn't good. But to prevent the accident, first, you got inattention. Almost all new cars now have a dashboard touchscreen to adjust your things like heater, radio, fan speed. You got to look at the thing and touch the screen to increase the fan speed or lower the heat, et cetera. This is not good. The government should have prevented this. This is something for you to look at while you're driving, and you don't need any more to look at. So there's one item right there. Item big number two, no enforcement. There is absolutely no law enforcement in areas of high traffic density. When you enter a high traffic area, I drive across the country. As soon as you get into high traffic, the police can no longer enter into the traffic and do anything. So there he is in the median, and he sees the guy in the big truck going by at 85 or 90. Can't catch him. Can't even enter into the stream of traffic. Two, three lanes full of traffic each way. So no law enforcement. Everybody knows this now.
All right, Richard.
Scary.
Yeah, Richard, let's get a response to that. Lieutenant Flanagan, how do law enforcement officials deal with that situation in high traffic and somebody goes whizzing by?
You know, we certainly have some high corridor areas here in Vermont, but this isn't the metropolitan area of New York or Chicago or even Boston. We don't see that much of a problem to get out there and stop violators that are speeding or committing other motor vehicle laws, violations. So I don't think we've seen that so much here. So that really has not been an issue. And as you probably know, we have identified four corridor areas on our interstates, two on Interstate 89 and two on Interstate 91, that we've had some pretty good success with reducing some crashes and certainly trying to bring down some of those speeders.
Let's talk to Nicholas in Middlebury. Hey, Nicholas, welcome to the program.
Hi. I hope this question isn't off topic too much, but I'm wondering about the reluctance of, I suppose it's the legislature, to pass any laws in this state about keeping headlights on, putting them on, particularly on dark days when the windshield wiper is on as well. It seems to me that particularly as visibility declines on the roads, the road stripes are being painted less and less often, that the headlights, which I think are used in a number of our neighboring states, would be a great help in such weather.
Nicholas, thanks for your phone call. Chief Morrison, what do you think of that idea?
Well, I think it's common sense, and I actually have remarked on that during family travel in Canada and other places where it is required, that it's startling how much more visible you are when you have your headlights on in inclement weather. So, yeah, I think it's common sense. I think it's a great idea for Vermonters. That being said, I'm not convinced that we would have any data to demonstrate that lack of visibility during inclement weather is responsible for any of our crash data, any spikes in our crash data.
We got this email from Sheila in North Bennington, who wrote, "Now that there's research showing that most accidents are the result of driver error, there's a push to have vehicles take over more of the driving. But there is another solution. We could upgrade drivers. We could require that all drivers take a driving and written test periodically, maybe every 20 years. Laws, roads, and vehicles can change a lot in that time. Driving is not a right, but a competency that should be affirmed at intervals like other licenses. Training and testing should not be limited to older people, as some have proposed, but should apply to everyone." Lieutenant Flanagan, what do you think of that idea?
You know, in recent years, there are some states that have looked real hard at that concept and have introduced legislation to test drivers, whether it be every 5 years or every 10 years, and not by age. And, you know, there has been some discussion amongst some agencies about that here in Vermont. I don't know of any legislation that has been proposed or introduced on that, but it's certainly something to consider. We certainly know the issue that we have with diminished capacity, you know, with certain portions of the population, and we can't really overstate that driving is a privilege and it's not a right, and one that can be given and one that should be taken away when need be, when someone can't drive safely or has shown a demonstration of reckless driving on our highways.
We got this post from Michael, who wrote us, "If our smartphones were only phones, then I could see the laws being what they are. But they also include most of our portable music collections as well. And to be at risk of getting pulled over for just changing to the next track is ridiculous." Chief, what would you say to Michael?
I would say in this day and era, there are ways to do that through hands-free technology. And any time that you need to take your hands off the wheel to manipulate a device, particularly one that causes you to look away from the road and down, and engage in fine motor skills to do what you need to do on a device, that's a bad thing. You are putting others around you on the highway at risk. And back in the day when the radio station was literally you set it and you forget it, you leave it like that, you don't channel hop every 3 minutes, that was different. The music was sort of in the background. I think what the writer of that note is implying is that listening to music is an active event, something that they have to actively engage in while they're driving. And I would say that that's not acceptable. That's not what you're behind the wheel to do. Let a passenger take care of that.
You know, Chief, I've heard several people say they don't use their handheld cell phones when the car is traveling. But when they come to a red light, they whip it out and use it. And then, of course, the light turns green and perhaps they're not done finishing their message. So that places them in a dangerous situation as well.
Well, using the device while you are the operator of the motor vehicle is disallowed, even if you are at a red light. The only time that you could do that and not be in violation of the law would be if you pulled off of the roadway and were no longer considered to be operating the motor vehicle upon a public highway. So trying to sneak in a quick text at a red light takes your attention off the primary task, which is driving safely from point A to point B. So perhaps the caller or the writer of that note ought to reconsider and not try to sneak in a text here and there.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Laurel, who's calling from Glover. Hi, Laurel. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. My comment is that we have had one technology from the get-go with our vehicles, and that is the horn. Why don't we use the horn when we see other people in their distracted behavior, whatever they're doing, brushing their teeth, shaving, whatever, and let people know, wake up, you're driving, I see you. And then, especially if you're in a, you know, congested area, you're going to get a lot of horns. And then the police will be tipped off that there's people driving distracted, and the chances of them doing it again, if they got everybody honking at them, you know, I think that would stop some of that behavior, mm-hmm. I would think. Anyway, so that's my comment. I think we should, you know, it should be a law. You see somebody else using their phone or shaving their face or combing their hair or doing their makeup, toot the horn, wake them up. Say, I see you.
All right.
And that'll let other people know.
Laurel, thanks very much for your phone call. Lieutenant Flanagan, what should a driver do if they notice dangerous behavior in another vehicle?
Well, I think calling them out or using the horn is probably something that may stop their behavior for a moment, but then they're likely to pick that back up again. Many of these drivers are a danger to the public, and we encourage folks, if they're seeing dangerous driving out there, to report it as soon as possible. You know, there is an exemption to our hands-free law, which is calling 911. So if it's truly an emergency, we would like to call them, but we prefer if they could do it hands-free anyway. But if someone can't stay in their lane, is causing near misses on the highway, that's something that we want motorists to report. And if you've got a passenger, obviously, that would be the better person to call 911 or your local police department, wherever you are. But we can certainly follow up with those drivers and try to make contact and determine who was operating that vehicle and take appropriate action.
Today we're looking at highway safety, and our guests, Colchester Police Chief Jennifer Morrison and also Lieutenant John Flanagan of the Vermont State Police. Lieutenant Flanagan, I'm wondering, what do you say to someone who says, you know, it's their choice if they're going to wear a seatbelt or not? They don't need the heavy hand of government telling them what to do.
Well, Bob, there's no question, and no one really can dispute, that using seatbelts reduce injuries and save lives. It's something that's been studied for decades. I think that many of us struggle to understand why someone would choose not to wear a seatbelt. It's the easiest thing to do when you get in your vehicle, and many of us that have been in the law enforcement field have seen countless crashes that would have saved a life if someone had done just a simple thing like buckling up. I would say, you know, people say it's my choice to wear my seatbelt, and it's only going to harm myself. But if you think about, as a driver of a vehicle and you are involved in something where you've got to take quick evasive action, or even if you're in a minor crash, but you lose control of your vehicle, you could end up from the driver's seat into the passenger seat. And then you've lost total control of your vehicle. Then you are risking the lives of others, essentially, by those actions of you losing control of your vehicle. So it's really not just about the driver, and it's not the driver's decision, because you have the ability to affect the safety of others.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Joe in Bridport. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I'm very glad to hear the comments on staying in your seat. I took an advanced driver training course with Stevens Driving School in New Hampshire. And two of the points that they stressed over and over and over was, if you want to stay in control of your vehicle, you put your hands at 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock positions on the steering wheel, and have your seat belt properly fastened. That's the only way you stay in control of your vehicle in an emergency situation. And they would put the drivers through repeated avoidability simulations so that you automatically were able to steer around most any situation where somebody pulls in front of you. I drove for years in Europe. It speeds up to, well, I travel, it speeds up to 150 miles an hour. On the high-speed roads of Britain, I never saw an accident. I never saw skid marks. This was previous to Maggie Thatcher days. But it was largely because they took much the same course as the Stevens Driving School offers before they could get a license. I mean, there were a number of reasons: better roads, better signage, better cars, etc. But that was the primary thing. And when I took the advanced driver training courses, it was they were subsidized by an insurance company that I got my insurance from. The agent who was on hand said that if everybody took that course, we would see traffic fatalities go down to a very small percentage of what they were at the time.
All right, Joe, we appreciate your phone call very much. Let's turn to Ray, who's calling from Walden. Hi, Ray. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I'm calling because I'd like to bring back up the question and mention of a lack of enforcement on the roadways. And I'd particularly like to talk about the Route 2 corridor headed towards St. Johnsbury, between Danville and St. Johnsbury. The road is not a two-lane road. It's pretty much a single lane the most way, most of the way. There's a lot of traffic before 8 o'clock in the morning, and drivers get very frustrated. And what tends to happen is you head out on there, which I do almost every day, is that you're taking your life into your own hands. People are tailgating. There's a lot of illegal and dangerous passing, excessive speed, and also distracted driving. And this is coming from, in my observation, all types of drivers. And one day I stopped and talked to a state trooper who was parked on the side of the road, and I asked him, you know, why was this going on? And he told me that there was no enforcement before 8 a.m. in the morning. So basically people are able to drive in this way extremely dangerously and with impunity. And I don't think that's right, and I'm not looking to sic the law on people, but, you know, I shouldn't be having to, and other people shouldn't be having to, take their lives in their own hands when they head out on the highway in Vermont.
Okay, Ray, thanks very much for your phone call. Lieutenant Flanagan, does it become a resource issue for the Vermont State Police?
Bob, sometimes it does become a resource issue. We certainly cover, and this is probably an area between our St. Johnsbury office and our Middlesex office, probably most likely Washington County area, I think, that the caller was speaking about. And this has been an area that has shown up in some high crash data in the past. I think about 3 or 4 years ago, we had a number of bad fatalities in that stretch of highway. You know, however, people don't know. It's no secret that the state police don't have 24-hour coverage. Most of our shifts start at 7 a.m. And they go to the early morning hours, and we're on a on-call status. However, we do have opportunities for specific targeted highway safety enforcement outside those hours to target things of this nature, as well as impaired driving, especially in the overnight hours. So, but with that, we have competing demands for service. We've got to answer all kinds of calls and complaints for the citizens of Vermont that we serve. And in between that, we do our best to try to go out and do proactive enforcement too, and that is a priority of the Vermont State Police. And we will be out there, and we certainly have been lately. And we're trying to identify areas where we're having these crashes and we're having these types of problems. And it's very important that we hear from the public so we can address those appropriately.
Chief Morrison, you were talking earlier about the need perhaps for a primary enforcement seatbelt law in Vermont. I'm wondering, do you have cases where you're out on the road on patrol and you see that someone doesn't have their seatbelt on, but there's really nothing you can do about it?
Well, I guess that the first part of that question would be, my honest answer would be, I don't have the opportunity to be out on patrol all that often anymore as the chief of police. But the answer is yes, of course. We all drive to and from work, and we all drive to and from meetings, et cetera, and we do have the opportunity to see some of these things. And it is frustrating to think, you know, that you can't stop and have a conversation with that person, not necessarily for the purpose of laying a ticket on them, but hopefully to have the opportunity to educate them. And impact driver behavior. I mean, at the end of the day, we are trying to change behaviors, not generate revenue. So, yes, we do see things in passing that we have no ability to pull someone over for, and it does become frustrating.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Eric, who's calling from Hanover, New Hampshire. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Happy to be here.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to talk about potentially leadership by example. I'm a sales rep, and I cover New England, travel extensively on our highways, routinely see troopers and local police exceeding the speed limit well in excess of 75 miles an hour with no lights flashing, so would assume they're not responding to an event. If they slow down to 65, they'll set an example. Other people will slow down, and they'll save fuel. As well as be able to see the guys that are coming up in the third lane speeding and possibly take action.
Eric, thanks for your phone call. Lieutenant Flanagan, what about that? You know, folks are out driving on the interstate and then they see a Vermont State Trooper pass by, you know, maybe at 75 or 80. Does Eric have a point?
Well, they certainly should be leading by example. But I would say that there are times where it may be counterproductive and dangerous, even if they are going on a call, you know, that may be not be a loss of life call where they would go lights and siren, but something that they want to, that they need to get to in an expedited manner. So they may be exceeding the speed limit. You know, we certainly don't encourage that behavior unless they need to do and what I've outlined before. But the law does exempt them in some cases to exceed the speed limit while on duty, performing a public safety function.
Let's talk to Logan, who's calling from Manchester. Hi, Logan. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me.
What's on your mind today, Logan? It sounds like you're in your car.
So the issue that I wanted to bring up is a more oversight from the state into private driver's education programs. For example, when I took driver's ed, I literally went for one single drive with my instructor for less than half an hour. And that was enough for him to then say, okay, you know, this is good enough. Here's your slip. Go to DMV. Go get your license.
So, Logan, you think it should be tougher?
I absolutely think it should be tougher. I mean, you look at a lot of accidents in the state. You know, we had a fatality close to town just a month or so ago, and a lot of it is young people driving too fast, inexperienced drivers that don't know how to handle a lot of various situations that can be thrown at them, whether of their own choosing or due to the environment, weather hazards, et cetera, on the road.
Lieutenant Flanagan, I thought there was a requirement that young drivers, before they got their license, had to log, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 hours during the day, certain number of hours at night. Is that right?
That is for young drivers. But I think one of the issues is if you are someone who waits until you're older, like age 18, they don't follow those same mandates to obtain their driver's license. Our driver's ed program, and it's certainly not my field, although I work a lot with folks in the driver's ed program, both at the state and local level. But they've made vast improvements over the year. And I can tell you from even when I got my driver's license, there's a lot more to driver's ed today than ever. But we do see problems with our young drivers. You know, we've got drivers that are on our highways that have inexperience. But, you know, the creation of the driver programs as far as junior operators with some of the restrictions that have been put in place with minimizing distractions with passengers initially, and there's a 3-month and a six-month period, I think that's been very helpful. And we've seen a reduction in our younger driver population in serious crashes and fatalities huge improvements that we had since the mid-90s.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Don, who is calling from Moriah, New York. Hey, Don, what's on your mind today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just got a quick question about distracted driving for your panel. Out in the road, you always see drivers with their pets on their laps, dogs or cats or anything like that. I was just wondering, is there any law against that?
Chief Morrison, what do you do when you see somebody with their dog in their lap while they're driving?
Absolutely nothing. Right now, that unless we could demonstrate that the pet was actively impeding the person's ability to operate safely, we would not have a reason to pull the driver over. I personally agree that someone ought to do something about that. There are some dogs that are on people's lap, and I'm seeing the driver look left, look right. But in the absence of driving that is impacted by that, we have no ability to pull them over, and there's no ticket to write.
Chief, we were talking about handheld cell phones and how that's impairing for many drivers. What do you say to the person who says, hey, what's the difference between talking on a handheld cell phone and having a very vigorous discussion with the passenger in the car?
Well, first and foremost, when you are physically holding something up to your ear, you are engaging in an extra layer of motor skills, of gross motor skills, to hold this up to your ear. So you are already focusing on keeping the phone up to your ear so that you can hear and speak and be heard. Certainly a vigorous discussion in a car could lead to distractions, no doubt. An argument or a really raucous conversation could absolutely lead to distractions. So while there's varying degrees of distraction, I think that to some degree we can only manage a certain amount of driver behavior. And the time when we start getting into trying to legislate or enforce what people are doing in terms of conversations in their car, we're really on a slippery slope. But when I can see someone physically holding a device to their ear and their brain is also dividing their attention to also engage in the conversation on the phone, now we know, you know, unequivocally that their attention is divided.
Today, we're looking at highway safety issues, and with us today, Lieutenant John Flanagan, who's the commander of traffic operations for the Vermont State Police, and also Colchester Police Chief Jennifer Morrison, who's the head of the Vermont Chiefs of Police Association. Lieutenant Flanagan, last week it was announced that both local and state police would have more high visibility campaigns. We've certainly seen that happen throughout the state. Have they been successful?
I think so. We have done dozens of saturation patrols. We've been working with local law enforcement agencies. We're really trying to send a message to the public that, you know, although this is a daily mission for the Vermont State Police, we have made an extra effort emphasis on highway safety. And I think, you know, the crash statistics take a little bit of time to come out where we can actually, you know, look at the data and vet them. But you know, we've seen, I think, one fatal crash in the last 2 weeks since we had that terrible 24-hour period where we saw 7 or 8 deaths.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Lee in Roxbury. Hey, Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I had two thoughts. One is, why can we not have cars which will refuse to start unless everyone's seatbelt is buckled in, although there will be people who will jump up and down about their personal rights about that, but that seems like a good solution. And number two, I think the speeds people travel at around here are ridiculously excessive, and I put part of that blame on car manufacturers and the way they advertise their cars. If you look at the car ads, which are constant on television, they're always showing how fast the car is going to go on these winding, steep roads, across beaches, across dirt roads, and they're traveling at high rates of speed. So everybody who buys those cars thinks that's what they can do.
Lee, that's a very interesting idea, the idea the car won't start unless the seat belts are buckled. Lieutenant Flanagan, is that a possibility?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a good point. I've never heard that before, but certainly something that would have to come from our car manufacturers and our lawmakers if they wanted to see that happen. I really believe that technology, some good technology, is going to help us really reduce crashes and bring down the death toll all across the country. There are some things in the works, and specifically it's been a lot of talk about autonomous vehicles, that they're coming at some point. I think we still have a long ways to go before we'll see anything like that here in Vermont, especially in rural areas. But there's things that are out there, and I talked about technology before, that there's some things that I think that we'll be looking at here in the state of Vermont, and things like automated enforcement, which have been very successful in other parts of the country when they're used properly in areas where we've seen high speeds and serious crashes, that they can have a significant effect in reducing those crashes and bringing down speeds on our highways.
And what exactly do you mean by automated enforcement?
Automated enforcement is the use of both radar or LIDAR with a camera system. So when we hear stories about lack of enforcement because of those competing demands, that this is something that's automated basically by a vendor that tracks the speed of vehicles, takes their picture, and they're issued a traffic ticket. Specifically, it's a lower fine and usually doesn't carry points. But it has shown through research and data that it has been able to reduce crashes and speeds. So whether that's something that's supported in the future, we'll see. But I think it's at least in the discussion.
And Chief Morrison, do you think, Lee said people are just driving so fast, do you think people are driving faster these days, both on local roads and on the interstate?
I'm not sure that is true in every part of our community. I certainly think that there are certain roadways that tend to be the main arteries and the interstates where that is true. I can tell you that I've been doing this 27 years, and people's perception of speed has always been a recurring theme. People frequently believe that the speeds are too fast in their neighborhood or in a certain portion of town. And we work hard to try and gather data to either support that claim or refute it. Perception is one thing. So, yes, if people's perception across town and across the state is that speeds are too high, then we really have to go to work on that, because the perception is their reality. The data does not necessarily support in my community that the speed is as high as people think it is in their neck of the woods. So I think that everything we've talked about up to this point, the road surfaces are better. The vehicles are far more sophisticated, more nimble, they accelerate far more quickly. And folks' sense of invincibility when they're behind the wheel is all contributing to certainly elevated speeds in some areas, main corridors and main throughways in towns, and potentially on side roads as well. So I think it's a mix. I think it's a mix of perception and reality.
Lieutenant Flanagan, I've heard that some state and local roads in Vermont are narrower than they should be, that these projects have received waivers from the federal government for scenic reasons. Have you heard that?
I don't have any specific information regarding that, but I came to Smuggler's Notch as being one narrow area on Vermont 108. But I would suspect that I think we've all been to some rural roads certainly that appear narrow.
Let's go back and talk to Karen in Ferrisburg. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the program.
I realize you addressed this issue recently, but I'm calling in about bicycle safety and cars, because I live in an area where we have a lot of bicycle tours and a lot of people from out of state probably who won't be hearing this show. But I was wondering what the laws are regarding bicyclists riding side by side when other traffic is present, because my experience is they aren't very good about riding single file, and it frequently creates dangerous situations where people are either obligated to ride or drive at a very slow rate of speed until there's a safe opportunity to pass people, which may not occur for several miles. And I realize a lot of these people. They're on vacation. They're enjoying our stay, and we don't want to offend them. But there are others of us that are on our way to work or have places we have to be. And I just wonder what the actual law is regarding bicyclists and yielding to other traffic and being observant of other traffic around them.
Lieutenant Flanagan, what is the law?
Our bicycle riders can ride two abreast, but they cannot impede traffic. So if there is traffic behind them that wouldn't be able to pass, for example, they would have to move over to a single file.
And for I'm sure for a lot of bicyclists, when they're out on things like Route 2 and other big roads, there's some concern that the drivers are not all that aware of them at the same time.
This really goes back to sharing the road, and we've really strengthened some of our vulnerable users laws. But bicyclists have many of the same requirements under the law that vehicles do, so they have to yield and stop in many occasions. And it comes down to us, sharing the road. And we go back to some of those narrow roads. If you take Route 2, you may have narrow shoulders in those areas. And for people to be able to pass safely, maybe they have to wait a minute so they can give enough clearance to go around that bicycle safely without interfering with oncoming traffic as well. And there's a recommendation that we should be giving bicycles 4 feet of clearance.
Let's get a quick call in from Neil in Brattleboro. Hi, Neil. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to reflect for a moment on a segment or a piece of your show. It was maybe 20 minutes ago now. I respect law enforcement a great deal, and I think you have some excellent representatives on today, especially their communication skills, which are so important for talking with us all. But the notion that we as the public should alert drivers to their bad behavior seems a bit alarming to me. I think we would all agree that we live in a society that is developing a certain level of stress, and I think we see that in our drivers. I had an example where I tried to draw someone's attention to their bad behavior. I wasn't in a position to be scolding. I simply gave them a little honk with the horn. And they proceeded to be very aggressive with their vehicle and then actually hit my vehicle. I do think that law enforcement is our greatest tool in this situation, and I think we should be wary to take law enforcement into our own hands. I think, unfortunately, people that might be driving poorly might already have a certain degree of disregard for others, and you may only be triggering them.
Neil, we're almost out of time, but thank you very much for your comments. Lieutenant Flanagan, road rage is out there. I saw it a couple of days ago where somebody cut somebody off, and then the other person really raced down the highway to try to catch up to them and make bad faces at them.
It's pretty easy. Leave this to the authorities. Call law enforcement, get as much information as you can, and let us handle it instead of creating those problems where things could get worse.
You know, and I'm going to chime in on that because this is really important about the collective efficacy of a community. So a situation that's happening on an interstate highway is very different from a situation that is happening on a small road near the high school in a small town in Vermont where everybody knows everybody. And as a community, we have got to step up and start holding each other accountable for bad behaviors, whether those are driving behaviors or something else. So I think we do need to differentiate between potentially dangerous situations and ones where the community just says, somebody else fix this. I don't want to be involved.
We've been discussing many important highway safety issues today. Many thanks to our guests, Colchester Police Chief Jennifer Morrison and Vermont State Police Lieutenant John Flanagan. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.